This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of GeekDad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 127, Time Traveling Marines Invented SpaghettiOs. Hello again, everyone, and Happy New Year. We are back. This is The Geek Dads, episode number 127. I am Ken Denmead, editor and publisher of GeekDad.com. Welcome back, folks. It is 2013. We've been gone for quite a while. It's probably been, what, 4 weeks? 5 weeks? 6 weeks? I don't know. It's been a month. It's been a long time.
It's been a while.
I think we took off maybe after the first podcast of December and decided to take it easy, but
I think we did two, actually, but yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah, we did one on the 19th.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, so well nigh 4 weeks. We are back. Plenty to talk about, and joining me for our first podcast of the new year, first of all, as usual, our managing editor, Mr. Matt Blum. How you doing, Mr. Muppet?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Are you a Muppet or a man?
Pretty sure I'm
a Muppet of a man. Yeah.
He's a very manly Muppet.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And that amusing voice also on the line right now from the balmy environs of Greater Massachusetts is our good old friend, Mr. Doug Cornelius. Doug, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Howdy. Welcome. Yeah. Balmy. In Boston, it was 60 yesterday, which made it warmer than, I believe, Los Angeles.
Yeah, it would have been warmer than the Bay Area
Chicago.
Here. Yeah.
You're supposed to get snow tomorrow, though, right?
Well, that's New England, of course. It's going to snow tomorrow.
Yeah. See, that's the one strange thing about all this that hot year we had and everything, is that actually the West Coast, and especially our Bay Area, we were quite, we were like opposite the trends. It was an extremely mild summer, and now it is a somewhat colder than normal winter. So everything is all screwed up right now.
Oh, yeah. I saw some weather forecasters down in L.A. freaking out because it's going to get down into the 50s. The coldest weather you could imagine.
I heard it hit 35 in LA, actually.
Yeah, it was. We were down at Disneyland around New Year's, and yeah, it was hitting in the low 60s during the day, which was really, really nice. that was good. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, we have made it back. It was a good holidays. As I said, we had a nice little trip down to Disneyland. I have to say, I saw Cars Land for the first time, which was phenomenal. Loved it. Great. Want to go back when there's about one quarter of the people there and actually get to ride some of the stuff, but it was a ton of fun. As I mentioned in my post about it a week and a half ago, I think Cars Land has tipped the scales in California Adventure, and California Adventure was sort of the also ran park, and it has good stuff in it. And what would usually happen, especially on the early entrance mornings, which used to be at like, the park would open at 9, so if you got there at 10, and then if you got there at 9, that was your early entry if you're staying at one of the hotels. And then everybody would rush over to the Toy Story Mania ride, because that was the real big draw for families. And now it's Cars Land. And first of all, they're opening the park 2 hours earlier now, and they're getting droves and droves of people in the Cars Land. The big Cars ride, we were there all of the major days we were there. If you hadn't gotten to there was a line for the fast passes. The fast passes for the entire day would sell out between 9 and 9:30.
Wow.
And then the line for the ride, if you tried to do just wait in line, was usually about 3 hours.
Wow.
So I did not actually get to ride the Cars ride this time around, and we'll have to try it for the next time. But the whole place is just fantastic. I think it perfectly balances the whole park now. And California Adventure is now, I think it just, it added the extra weight to the park that makes it as wonderful a destination as Disneyland is itself. Not the least of which because you can actually get booze there too, which is fantastic. So, really like that. The best, as I always say, there's this little there's a little bar behind Ariel's Grotto at Paradise Pier that if you get there, you know, about an hour and a half before the World of Color comes on, you can grab a seat overlooking the water and have drinks, have food, and sit there and watch World of Color sitting down, looking over the water. It's the best place to watch the show.
That's great. You know, it's a lot like Disney World down in Florida, where they have, you know, they've divided up between the different sections, and the same thing.
Right.
You know, with Epcot, we just sit down and grab drinks and watch the shows.
Really, the civilized way to do it.
Well, I mean, if you spent all day with the kids, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to say, having done Disney World last year, last summer, and then, you know, back, I have a total West Coast bias. Disneyland is smaller. It's only two parks.
Yep.
It's only three hotels. Would love it so much more because, first of all, you can actually walk between the two parks in 5 minutes.
Right.
And you can walk to the hotels. And we really enjoyed our trip to Disney World. But the fact that you were a minimum 15 to 20 minutes to get from one place to another for just about any of it it got a little tiring after a while. So it's a different experience, but I mean, it's fantastic and there's so much to do there. It's really neat, you know, Disneyland, that's where our hearts are.
Never been to Disneyland, but Disney World definitely has a lot to recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say Disneyland is just, it's a more intimate experience because it's not so spread out. Everything is right there in that one spot. So, you know, it's 200 yards between the entrances of the two theme parks.
Mm-hmm.
And you can walk from one, you can walk to the other. There's an entrance into California Adventure from the Grand Californian Hotel, which is phenomenal.
It's kind of like Universal Orlando.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at Disneyland, I mean, it's hard to do more than one park in a day. I mean, there's just so much there. I think I found the same thing true down at Disney World. That you just, we'd spend a day going, where are we going to go? We're going to MGM or go to Magic Kingdom. We're going to go to Animal Kingdom or.
That's true. I mean, it's how you want to pace things. But you could, you know, go into one park in the morning and then go catch a show in the other one in the evening, you know, have reservations on one side or the other. That's the other. There's a new restaurant in California Adventure that was fantastic, Carthay Circle. It's part of the entrance area that they've built in California Adventure that's supposed to be like late 30s, early 40s Los Angeles. And the outside's done up like an old classic movie theater. And then you go inside and it's like a fancy 40s restaurant. And delicious food, excellent drinks, lots of, if you have a larger party, we had six people, a whole bunch of these little almost enclosed room booths that were a ton of fun.
Apparently we're hard to hear.
I'll see if I can tweak the sound a little more.
So that restaurant sounds really cool, but while I haven't been there, it doesn't sound nearly as cool as Be Our Guest in the new Fantasyland. Which, I'm sorry, looks exactly like the Beast's Ballroom.
Oh, cool. Nope, haven't seen that.
Which is pretty awesome. And what's kind of cool is if you go there for lunch and you want to do like a quick meal, you can order on these computers and they give you a plastic rose with an RFID chip in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it encodes, you know. We order on that, and then they find you. You know, you go to your table, and they just find you.
Nice. I know they're talking about changing things over. You'll just get a wristband.
Yes, they're doing that. They're starting to do that already. Yeah, they're starting to do some tests.
Yeah, RFID or whatever it is on the wristband, and your whole account will be online.
Yeah, you just charge things to that. Your tickets will be on there, and yeah.
So and easy to spend
heaven
so
help
much
you,
money.
And heaven help you if you lose it, presumably. But yeah, I can see how that would be a huge help for people who forget to bring their hotel tickets, you know, their hotel card if they're trying to get in like the after hours things that they do at some of the parks, where you have to prove that you're a guest, things like that. And but yeah, it should be pretty cool. They definitely don't miss a trick there.
Not at all.
I do like that. Yeah, at Be Our Guest, you can get gray stuff. They have a dessert from the song Be Our Guest.
Right, right.
Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me. Ask the dishes. Yeah. Yeah.
Fabulous.
It's like a blueberry mousse kind of thing, I think. I think that's what it was. I'm not sure. It was some kind of mousse. It was good.
Hey, like I say, this is a perfect segue. Have you guys seen today Andy on our site on Geek Dad put up the preview of this new Disney game, Disney Infinity, that
yes.
looks like it's sort of Skyland, you know, Disney meets Skylanders with some Minecraft thrown in world building stuff.
It looks really cool. And I like some of the differences that it seems to have from Skylanders, whereas, you know, in Skylanders everything's encoded on the figures themselves. So, you know, you raise them up in levels and such, and then but that's only good on that figure, and then if you switch to a different Skylander, you have to raise them up right. separately. Like a regular role-playing game, I guess. But this one, they apparently have like chips that you can put underneath them to upgrade them. And so you can kind of switch it around.
Yeah,
and you can also pick what adventure you want to do, as opposed to just going in story order.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, you know, they've got worlds set up for based on many of the different movie franchises, and then but you can mix and match stuff. I mean, I saw, you know, Captain Barbossa standing next to Perry the Platypus in the video, and it was like, what? Wait a minute, that hurts. and then supposedly you can. There is your own world building. You can create your own levels or your own worlds. So
yeah, I think that's a really cool idea.
And I happened to notice on Twitter tonight that it appears our friend of Geek Dad, Apelad, was part of the development of the game.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. So so that's very cool. I always forget that his day job is he works in video games. Other than being a, you know, world famous cartoonist.
Yeah, Patricia knows Disney Universe is like that, assorted characters working together. That's true, although here it actually has like figurines in the real world, which Universe did not have, which is kind of cool. And it has that added dimension of realism for kids, which I think helps a lot.
That is pretty neat.
Also means, of course, if they lose the pieces, they're screwed. But, you know, when you...
and that's true with everything, right?
This is true.
So what else we got this week? Matt, you wanted to talk a little bit about Aaron Schwartz.
I thought we should mention it. I mean, it's such a horrible story that I think it bears mentioning. I don't know if everybody has heard it, but he's Aaron Schwartz is he's 26 years old. He was one of the original founders of Reddit, and actually when he was 14, he was one of the people who worked on the RSS standard. So that kind of gives you an idea of just how talented and brilliant a guy he was. But he worked for, like, you know, Freedom of Information. He worked doing a lot of things toward, you know, making the web the internet a freer place for information. And one of the things he did this thing at MIT, and I don't know all the various ins and outs of it, but he hooked up this laptop in like this closet that nobody used, and just downloaded everything from JSTOR, which was actually free information that you didn't have to pay for at MIT. So he wasn't actually breaking any laws as far as I could ever tell. But and then released it. The only possible law I could ever see that he broke was trespassing, and they dismissed that charge against him. And he, you know, he broadcast this, you know, he put this all this information online that was theoretically available for free anyway. And the Justice Department launched this big investigation. They had criminal charges against him. They were going to try to put him away for 30 years, which is more than, you know, some rapists and murderers get, which is just astonishing. And so, like, 2 weeks before his trial was supposed to start, he killed himself.
Yeah, yeah. JSTOR was an online database of journal publications of scientific research.
Right.
And you had to have some sort of an account to get to it, but it wasn't that, you know, the stuff itself did not cost, and so he did sneak into a building, get into a like a server closet, plop a laptop onto the network, and then run a Python script to basically download all the stuff, and then took it out from inside the network and put it on the internet.
Right.
And there was some illegality involved in that. However, ultimately,
absolutely.
MIT actually, they dropped charges. They would not press charges against him.
Right.
But the Secret Service gotten involved and decided that this would be a test case for...
I thought it was the Justice Department, but okay.
Well, sure. The Secret Service was involved in it as well.
Because it had to do with
utilization of technology and committing new technology and committing crimes.
There was a lot of illegality involved.
Yeah.
Downloaded 4 million documents illegally. I mean, the sheer number was staggering. The prosecution seemed like it was a bit aggressive in terms of going after him, considering
30 years
it was such
in
a
prison.
Nonviolent crime.
30 years in prison for a crime that hurt absolutely nobody. I mean, that's ridiculous for a guy who's 26 years old. I mean, I'm trying to put him away for longer than he's been alive to start out.
Well, I mean, we put away a lot of white collar criminals for a long period of time.
Yes, but usually their crimes actually hurt somebody in some way. You know, white-collar crimes, like, I mean, Enron, the other guys who ran Enron, that technically was a white-collar crime, but it hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was finally down in the negotiations to a couple months in jail, which he wasn't willing to do.
No, the problem was that the original prosecutors were willing to cop plea bargains, but the federal prosecutor who got put in charge of the case refused to consider anything but total nuclear war.
And that's what drove him to kill himself.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, whatever else, other problems he had going on, that obviously was a stress that would do that.
I'm not saying it's the sole factor, but obviously that's the main reason. I mean, his trial was about to start. He was facing prison time, and it's really a hard thing to face if you're, you know, I mean, that's a long, long time to be looking at prison, and it's completely destroying your life. I mean.
Oh, yeah. And financially, I mean, his legal fees were enormous.
Right. But, I mean, even aside from that, it takes him away from everybody he loves for essentially, you know, for as long as he's been alive already. I mean, that's. Yeah. That's
on the other hand, he had
devastating.
A huge support base, so it's
true.
Tragic that he didn't. Personally feel that he had the people behind him to support him through whatever the end result was.
I agree.
You know, if it had gone to trial, you never know what ultimately would have come of it. Since the prosecution was taking it a little bit further.
Well, I'm not saying he made the right choice. I mean, by no stretch of the imagination would I say that. I mean, suicide is never the right answer. But, I mean, I suppose if you're terminally ill, that's one thing. But, you know, if you're not, then it's never the answer. And he should not have done that, obviously. But you have to assign a certain amount of blame to the people who were pursuing him for something that didn't hurt anybody. I'm not saying they're responsible for his death, but they're responsible for driving him to extremes. I'm not sure I'm putting that well, but
it sounds like it was on the aggressive side. But you know, anybody subject to criminal prosecution it ends up being in the same boat.
Yeah.
That you're facing potential prison time. You're facing the legal bees. You're not certain about your future. Do you want to put sort of the randomness that comes in from having a jury trial, where you have no idea what those 12 people are going to end up deciding?
Yeah, one way or the other. I mean, he was a very bright young man who did something that you can either look at as harmless, or it was technically a criminal thing, and he was going to suffer some measure of consequence for it. Probably not, arguably not what theoretically the crime deserved, but it's a tragedy one way or the other. What I think is impressive has been the outpouring of response over it, including an entire movement on Reddit where professors have been freely putting their own journal articles out as PDFs on Twitter as a statement of honoring his memory and what he was trying to do.
Yeah, part of it is what he did was several years ago when you still needed the publication system to get information out there. Now with everything behind, most people switching over to SSRN and otherwise making their papers free from the outset, that you haven't needed these sort of formal publications anymore for academia.
Yeah, so very, very sad, and hopefully some changes will come of it. I know there is already it'll be interesting to see what there are some investigations going on. Obviously, the president of MIT has launched an investigation to see what part they played in pushing the prosecution where it went. There is a petition already up on the White House website demanding that the prosecutor be removed for overreaching her prosecutorial authority in pursuing the case so aggressively. And so noise is being made about it, and if that noise can help affect positive change, then that is at least something that will...
At least something good could come out of it.
Right.
Yeah, right. And one of the other petitions is to change the underlying statute that he was prosecuted under.
Yes. Exactly so. Speaking of White House petitions...
Yeah, on a much later note.
On a much later note, speaking of online petitions, there is obviously someone awesome working in the White House somewhere for those who hadn't seen the story on our site or all over the geekier corners of the internet, there had been a petition on the White House site, and if everybody doesn't know, there is a place on the White House's website where you can submit petitions, and if a given petition gets 25,000 votes or more, the White House promises that they will formally respond to the petition. That hasn't been 100% true, because there have been some petitions put up there that were rather scurrilous, but...
Yeah.
For most of them, they do just that. And somebody put up a petition on the website requesting that the government secure resources and funding and begin construction of a Death Star by 2016. And it got over 25,000 votes. And
shockingly.
And so the White House formally responded with a letter stating, titled, "This is not the petition response that you're looking for," and going on to cite in gloriously well Star Wars versed in detail why it really was not practical to try and build a Death Star, including the $850 quadrillion it's been estimated that it would cost. And
why would you put all the resources into something that a one-man fighter can take down?
Exactly, exactly. And that they don't really support blowing up planets.
I wasn't too surprised that there was somebody geeky enough to write that in the White House, considering that the president himself is clearly a geek. I mean, this is the guy who, when there were fencing people, and they even linked to this, but in that piece, but who there were people with like Olympic fencers on the White House lawn for an event, came out with a lightsaber.
Yes,
and fenced with them with the lightsaber. I mean, he's geek. There's just no way around that.
Really like that.
So,
yeah, I mean, what the best part was the headline of the, you know, this isn't the petition you're looking for.
A work of genius. I hope at some point whomever was involved in drafting it gets recognized, because that's, you know, it's nice to know there are people with senses of humor.
No, I actually
in running our government.
I actually
doesn't
put
always seem that way.
I put in a note to one of the people that I have been in contact with at the White House, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, to see if I can get an interview with the guy who wrote it. So we'll see if anything comes with it.
Oh, good. That would be a good get.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, part of it is coming out of the Office of Management and Budget, which is, you know, the accountants internally. But the strange title of Chief of the Science and Space Branch sounds like an odd aspect of that that group. But
it does, but it wouldn't surprise me if it were completely real.
Right.
In fact, it would almost surprise me if it weren't.
Well, it's probably one guy down in the basement, you know. He's a junior CPA, graduated last year from Carnegie Mellon, and all right, Larry, you're the space guy, okay? Anything having to do with NASA, you have to run the budgets for. Okay.
You do it. Yeah, but, you know, this is all, you know, this is the original trilogy, so this is, you know, this is an older guy like us. This is not sort of the younger generation who would be the first trilogy or the Clone Wars kids.
That's very true. That is true. So we would expect it maybe to be someone a little older.
Mature.
Good question.
Mature.
I've grown out my goatee, so now I have something to
stroke
menacingly. Yeah.
A few weeks ago, actually during over the break, I let it grow out a little bit, and my wife came in and stared at it and was all gray, and she says, no.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, no. Yeah, I gave up on that. I was gray 20 years ago, 25 years ago, so it's just, I don't even worry about that anymore. I have to say, we saw. Have either of you guys seen Django Unchained yet?
Not yet.
No.
Oh man, Christoph Waltz in that. First of all, totally deserves his Oscar nomination. Hoping that he wins for it, because it is the most original, interesting, fun, exciting character that I've seen in a movie in a long time. He plays it so well, and he has this lovely full goatee that he just, every now and then, he's stroking and twirling it. Big bushy, fantastic. Fantastic movie.
Well,
for kids.
You know, with The Hobbit, facial hair is back in.
That's true, yeah.
Big, you mean a Quentin Tarantino film is not for kids? The hell is it?
But it's still phenomenal. Oh, I mean, Tarantino is so awesome at finding, you know, like actors from old TV, older TV shows, and, you know, people that aren't necessarily A, B, or even C list in Hollywood at this point, but putting them into great little character roles and letting them go crazy. Don Johnson is phenomenal in this.
Really?
Simply phenomenal. He should be doing other stuff. He was great.
So that isn't what we're often associated with Don Johnson.
Oh, he's hilarious. He's just fantastic. And I mean, people like Tom Wopat, Lee Horsley.
Okay. Really?
Matt freaking Houston. Yeah.
Okay.
So it is a great movie. I would not take any kids under 25 to go see it. But
it is a Tarantino movie.
It is a Tarantino movie, and as Glenn mentions, Tarantino is a real geek. He's a true geek, and fantastic. All right, what else, guys?
Well, you know, we're starting to hear the first sort of inklings of what's going to happen now that Disney owns Star Wars.
Hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yes, the rumors.
You know, when we grew up, it was always, you know, Star Wars. You have that trilogy, then you had the first trilogy, and then you had, you know, the trilogy that comes after it. And it seems like that third trilogy was never going to happen.
Well, Lucas actually said he was never going to make it.
And it sounds like he is never going to make it.
Well, he said it wouldn't. He said there was no story for it, but apparently there is.
They'll come up with something.
Because he said that inherently he had designed it to be the story of Darth Vader, and Darth Vader is dead now. You know.
Yeah, but at other times he said he had 9 stories laid out, and other, you know.
I know
he's
exactly.
Been all over the board with the stories. So,
but the rumors that are flying now, which is that they're going to do they're going to alternate and do movies that are in the regular progression of stories, but also do movies that are in the same universe but involve completely different characters and are just different stories entirely. I think that's kind of interesting. Just with the rumors that Zack Snyder is possibly going to do one that's sort of related to samurais.
Well, but hasn't that been? I thought that had been more recently. Like Glenn's mentioning that in the chat room. I thought I saw something today that said no, that's been completely denied. And
no, I hadn't seen that. It's possible.
Yeah. So it's you know.
But just because
seven samurai with Jedi, wow, you know that, you know.
Well, considering that, but I mean, Lucas took a lot of the inspiration for the Jedi from the samurai,
right?
From, you know,
and of course. So, what period would it be in? Because these would be in Seven Samurai. There were masterless samurai.
Uh huh.
So, how would you have masterless Jedi?
I don't know. It could be in the old, could be in the Old Republic. This is the Star Wars universe. You can just make shit up anyway.
And now I'm going to have to go back and bleep that out, Matt. Or we're going to get an explicit tag.
Get the explicit tag, yeah.
For one word, really?
Yeah. The other thing I'd heard about, too, is the possibility of a TV show. Because don't forget, Disney also owns ABC.
Well, they were talking about doing a TV show before Disney bought it, even. So, yeah, I could definitely see that happen.
Yeah, I heard comments that he's got like 50 scripts for a TV show.
And hopefully somebody will rewrite them before they film them. Yes.
Yeah, probably. Well, no, not necessarily that he had written, but that they had put together for it.
You think he let somebody else write them?
I don't think he's... Nah, yeah, I don't think...
Well, okay, somebody else writes The Clone Wars, that's true. So.
Yeah, I mean, at most he might write a development doc or a Bible or, you know, something like that, but I don't think he wants to do that stuff himself anymore.
Yeah, I get the sense that he's done.
I honestly believe that he got really burned over the second trilogy. I think I think, you know, for however much we want to vilify them, whatever, I think he did take that to heart, and I think he's bitter about the way the fandom reacted in such a personal way. And so I think that's a very significant part of the reason why he sold everything off.
Well, I think the main reason is he's not in the big greatest of health. He's getting, you know, he's getting up there. His kids have apparently made it fairly clear they don't really want to run, didn't really want to run things after, right. Yeah, after he was gone. So he wanted to make sure it was in good hands, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean, Frank, if you look at it now, the Clone Wars is the biggest collection of main material.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. They've done such a good job with that. So, Glenn mentions that Joss Whedon should develop Star Wars TV show or Brad Bird. I think you're more likely to get Brad Bird. We're just going to let Joss take care of the Marvel Universe for the time
being. Yeah, he's already got a TV show in the works, and he's also got movies in the works. He's a little busy.
Yeah, yeah. SHIELD will be on TV before Star Wars is on TV.
Well, sure.
As a live action. And
SHIELD's already in development.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course it will be, yeah. I still want to know how they're going to explain Coulson being alive, but...
I think it's like we all suppose that he didn't actually die, and...
You see him die on screen.
and the immediately, when it cut from that, he was thrust into a cryogenic chamber, moved to SHIELD, you know, medical facility, revived and brought back, and, you know, and Fury used that perceived tragedy to save, you know, get the team together and save the world.
Matt, don't forget back in the Buffy series, all of a sudden, Buffy had a sister that just appeared magically.
That was a little different.
Well, there was plot behind it.
There wasn't a big green guy in it, but yeah, it was, you know, Avengers.
It's all realistic. Storytelling. It'll work. It's Joss. He'll make it work. He'll make it work a lot better than a lot of people who bring people back from the dead have made it work. So,
yes, the thing, I don't know. Has Whedon ever, brought anybody back from the dead? I guess, well, you're Buffy, I guess, but
a couple of times.
And Buffy, people were dying, coming back all the time. Buffy died. Remember, you ended up with.
I just
Slayer,
said that. Yeah. Yeah,
she died.
She died a couple of times.
Yeah, but since then. It's been a while.
That's well, you know, Firefly got cut short, but we never saw. You know, there was.
You know, Wash could have come back.
Wash could come back in the Preacher.
Yep.
Well.
Yep.
Well, question, you know, I wonder if if the TV show had gone, I doubt he would have killed either of them.
Yeah, did you see the story the other day on Wired that guy tried using math and physics to prove that Wash could have survived? That
and ended up proving that he
couldn't. Ended up proving that he couldn't. That he was trying to prove that the forward windows on a spaceship would have been strong enough to resist the point of the Reaper spear coming through and shattering it, so that, you know, no, Wash should not have actually died. And unfortunately, he proved quite the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, he proved that. Oh, no, he absolutely really shouldn't have. There's no way he really could have.
Oh, well.
I mean, besides, I mean, even if the windows could have taken it, the fact that they had just crash landed, that can't have done wonderful things to the windows.
Yeah.
I mean, you got
it. Oh, don't start trying to justify it now. It happened. Yeah, there was a lot of torsion on them after the crash, so it's entirely reasonable that that spear went through.
They belly flopped and then went, you know, length of several football fields.
Well, that's right up there with the White House petition on the Death Star to actually come up with the dollar amount that it would cost.
Yes, yeah.
They could have just kept writing zeros because, you know, I don't know how you estimate that.
Yeah, who at the OMB got stuck figuring out that number?
I'm guessing that they might have just said, okay, this looks like a really ridiculously large number. That could be right.
Actually, they linked out. I think somebody online actually had put something up. Yes. They had linked out to a story. I believe we saw that. Oh, fabulous. Fabulous. I don't know. I can't think of a lot else going on right now. I mean, the fact that we're all still here, there was no apocalypse, that was good.
Yet.
Well, it's always yet, isn't it? The most recent apocalypse did not happen. The apocalypse du jour, as it were.
Yeah. So I pulled up the underlying thing on the Death Star. And that 852
quadrillion, I believe,
quadrillion was just for the steel.
Oh, they didn't throw union labor into that.
Well, I assume that's labor costs for it, but, you know, it doesn't include the weaponry.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you hit 850 quadrillion, does it really matter what you add on to that?
Kind of like the Big Dig, right?
Still going. Stuff's falling down. You got to fix it now.
It's been under construction for so long, the infrastructure is starting to fail.
Absolutely.
Yeah, nobody's really that shocked, honestly.
Oh, no. I love being a civil engineer. So much breaking that has to get fixed.
Well, you know, everybody's shocked that it's flooding. Okay, it's a tunnel built in fill next to our harbor, one. And then two, they changed the design. Originally, it was going to be a tunnel within a tunnel.
Right.
And they said, well, you know, that extra 4 feet of real estate they would have to take in downtown Boston would cost an extra $500 million.
Right.
So we can get rid of the extra tunnel and just have the one tunnel. Well, that extra tunnel is going to catch all the water because, you know, you're basically in the harbor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's water going to come in.
Never. If there's something, I've been involved in tunnel jobs before. If there's something you don't want to go cheap on, that's the waterproofing in the walls.
Yep.
Thicker walls, more waterproofing. Stop leakage. especially on things that usually require high voltage electricity to run. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's the news on the Wonder Woman TV show? I saw something come across on that. Is there movement on that?
I heard there was some.
Well, you know, I think the original conception was terrible.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
Well, there was one that they had actually produced a pilot for, and it looked just wicked. But that got canned, and I thought something new had come across.
CW is, with Amazon, they're calling it.
Actually, Corey wrote something about it this morning.
Yes, that's right. It was actually on the blog.
Well, I don't read Geek Dad. What are you talking
about? Yes, Amazon, and her name is Diana. It's unsubtle, yes. And they're talking about doing crossovers with Arrow. Possibly.
Yeah, who would ever believe that the CW is going to become the superhero channel?
Well, other than, S.H.I.E.L.D., but... Yeah.
Well, yeah, we still don't know where S.H.I.E.L.D. will land. Hopefully ABC. But
well, it'll almost have to be ABC. I don't think they can put that on Disney Channel.
No. Plus, they're going to need a big enough audience to pay for it.
Yeah.
That'll probably be higher end. I see there's a little movement on. I guess they're still working on the screenplay for Rome, Sweet Rome. Do you guys remember that the story about that?
No, I don't know.
That was the somebody put up this crazy idea on Reddit. What would happen if a marine infantry division appeared in ancient Rome?
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And this guy who did research on this historical on this stuff for the fun of it, sat down and over the period of like a week or so, wrote a couple thousand, you know, like 20,000 words of a narrative that went into detail about the hardware and what would happen, and that, you know, ended up with helicopters flying over the Colosseum and them taking over Rome and or something like that, and it got sold to a studio, and they're working on it to turn it into. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe it's just me, but didn't we see that with what was it called the with Kirk Douglas, the Final Countdown, when
they hardly even get to do anything. You know, a couple of jet flybys shoots down a Zero or something, and then they zip back to the future again. It didn't pay off.
You're right. There wasn't the payoff. The whole, you know, integrity of the timeline crap, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've gotten to the point where, you know, so many times in our lives, those stories are done in TV shows and movies, and everything fixes itself up nice and neat at the end. No, what we want to see is real messing with stuff. We want to see a Marine infantry unit with helicopters and tanks and snipers and... going after Centurions. Oh, that's a lovely bronze shield you're wearing there. Bing! Oh, bing. Turns out...
it doesn't really help.
Yeah, it doesn't really help against high-powered ammo. No.
See, but I view that, and that just, to me, is just the destruction of pizza and spaghetti. What would my kids eat if that actually happened?
But all of the Marines would know of pizza and spaghetti. And they actually, it would come full circle. They would introduce pizza and spaghetti to Italy.
come back the other way. That could be the hook right there.
It's like, who needs to go to China with Marco Polo to go get spaghetti? You, go grind some wheat, get some chicken eggs. We're going to make spaghetti right here in the 4th century. Come on.
Could be. You're right.
That's it. Turns out all Italian cuisine was invented by time-traveling Marines.
Well, so it was really never invented by anybody.
Right, right. There's a causality circle loop in the space-time continuum.
Mm-hmm. That would explain SpaghettiOs.
In more than one way, yes. Those were actually rations they had with them.
He's like, here you go, good enough.
Yeah, good enough. Booyah. No. Did everyone enjoy and watch the Doctor Who Christmas special?
I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I saw it.
How do we like what they're doing with the new companion? Well, she's not yet the new companion.
But she's going to be.
But the mystery that they're sort of sowing behind who she is, because they did, I think, thought they did a great job of being very coy in all of the lead up to the special, and then everybody sort of assumed, oh, there would be some explanation in the special for who she was, and then she dies again. Mm-hmm. But says the exact same thing to him.
Well, yes.
I'm gonna have to come clean and say I have never seen Doctor Who.
Never?
Well, Doug, yeah. It's been nice having you on Geek Dad.
I mean, I don't love Doctor Who the way some people like Ken do, but I've seen quite a bit of it.
But you watch it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife has become very fond of it.
Excellent. You married well, Matt. You should give it a shot, Doug. It's fun storytelling.
Yeah, it's on the list. I wanted to see that Christmas special, but my in-laws are staying with me for 2 weeks during Christmas time.
If you have Netflix streaming, I advise going and watching some of the Ninth and Tenth Doctor.
Okay,
especially the Tenth Doctor.
David Tennant is wonderful. The Ninth Doctor,
he was only on for one season.
He was only on for one season. He did a really good job of reestablishing the character and getting the ball rolling. But David Tennant, who came right after him, really made the show just blossom. And then the guy who's running right now is fantastic. So.
That's great. I just finished gorging myself on Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Which I didn't watch at first because it was dark, and I had a whole bunch of other dark shows I was watching at the time, so I needed something sort of light and fluffy to offset some of the other stuff, and somehow Breaking Bad didn't make the cut. So, but yeah, in the month of December, I was just glued to Netflix, watching all the catching up and poured through all four seasons, the first four seasons in a month.
Well, that must have been tough.
Again, my in-laws were staying with me for 2 weeks.
Right. So compared to that, it was light and fluffy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to. So I've mentioned it once or twice. My wife and I are still slowly working our way through rewatching all of X-Files.
Wow.
A couple of nights a week before going to bed, we'll Netflix and watch an episode. We are up to almost mid-sixth season. And the one we watched last night, I had, you remember them as you get partway into them and going, oh, yeah, this one was great. This is the one where Mulder goes to the Bermuda Triangle and finds himself shot back in time onto the Queen Anne that was lost in the Bermuda Triangle in 1939. And so when he's on that ship that gets taken over by a bunch of Nazis and who are after a scientist who's on board the ship, but many of the characters of the Nazis and the English who are on the ship in 1939 are actually played by the people who play his comrades in, you know, 1990s. And so he's very confused, and it's all, but they do some, they have so much fun with that episode. Especially there's a couple of scenes where in the two timelines, they're different characters are running around up and down hallways on the ship, and they actually did this combined with a line down the middle two camera thing showing them like walk across the same spot, the same actor as two different characters, and then get quizzical looks on their face because they feel like something weird is happening, and then they go on away. It was a very good episode. It was a lot of fun.
I'll be honest, I was never a fan of the X-Files. I tried to get into it, just didn't do it for me.
Ah, loved it. I was a huge fan back in the day. And also, The Lone Gunman, I think a show which needs to be redone now, which was phenomenal. They were, the characters were the uber conspiracy guys who Mulder sometimes went to for help and information. The funny thing being is the actors who played them were all actually originally crew members on the show who they roped into playing these roles. And then the characters became so beloved, they actually got their own show. They got a spinoff for one season that you can get on, I think you can find it on Netflix, and on, I've got it on DVD. The very surreal part is that the first episode of that spin-off series, The Lone Gunman, which was probably shot somewhere in, I'm going to guess, the early 90s, maybe mid-90s, involves somebody taking over a 747 and trying to fly it into the Twin Towers.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
Right after, you know, not long after
9/11. So that's a little bit wild to watch, but yeah, I mean, with all of the conspiracy theories that people subscribe to these days about just about anything, I think that's a ripe a ripe bit of IP to mine yet again, especially because. Really, if you've ever watched Fringe, especially the first season or so, they very specifically sort of set up that Fringe is in the same universe as X-Files. They actually reference the X-Files in Fringe.
No. That's cool.
And now, all right, and let's take the geek knowledge even further. And now, the guy who played the cigarette-smoking man, one of the big baddies in all of X-Files, is now playing a character in that new Canadian sci-fi series, Continuum, which just premiered on Sci-Fi, which we just watched the premiere episode for, which looked really good. I was very impressed by it. That being a show about terrorists from 2072, about to be executed, have stolen time travel and zapped themselves back to 2012 to start their movement over again and try and head off the political changes that they're trying to revolt against. And the lone cop who gets sucked into it and brought back into the past, and her having to try and hunt them down. You know, it's sort of a little Life on Mars-y, but instead of being from now going into the past, it's from the future coming to the present. And she's got all sorts of gadgets and stuff, but... And, Doug, I think you've muted yourself. I see your lips moving, but I cannot hear you talking. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, to me that sounds more like Terminator without the killer robots.
Yes.
Going back in time to do my political movement, but not having sort of Arnold right. come with sunglasses and
Terminator light. In their perceived future, it is a sort of a corporate oligarchical fascist. You know, there's no more democracy. The corporations have taken over, but so people don't necessarily have free speech and stuff. But there are a lot of people are safe and happy. And then there are these terrorists who are killing people to make political statements and to go after the leaders of the corporations because they are trying to restore democracy. So they're bad terrorists because they're killing people, but they're trying to restore democracy. So it's good, right? So it's, you know, it's got a lot of gray to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Continuum?
Yeah, it's on Sci-Fi. It's nice to see Sci-Fi actually putting something that's genuinely science fiction on.
Yes.
For a change.
Sci-Fi with the eyes instead of the Y.
Whereas 13 being mostly fantasy.
Right.
A fun show, but mostly fantasy.
Right. Oh, thanks, Glenn. So March 4th, 2001 was the pilot for The Lone Gunman.
Yeah, the tough part with fringe characters like that, which is, you know, they're really interesting in small doses, but, you know, having a whole show about them, it gets sort of tired.
Yeah.
I see the same thing they keep talking about with the Office, of having a show just with Dwight Schrute.
Yeah.
Like,
or After MASH.
But they
or After
MASH. They made a pilot. They made a pilot of the Dwight Schrute.
Joni Lovechat?
But it did not get picked up.
I'm not sure that Joni loves Chachi. Those were even beloved characters in the original series.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah, there's that.
Sorry, I was just going off. You caught the Gorg. I was watching, was it Monday's Nerdist podcast? He had Chris Jericho on, the wrestling champ.
Yep.
He happens to be a huge TV trivia geek as well. And the two of them were just going off on technically obscure trivia, all of which I got, which I was very proud of. But I mean, they were going pretty deep, so that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Turns out a lot of pro wrestlers are actually geeks.
It does not surprise me. I have to admit, I had a little wrestling thing back in my youth, and I've actually touched Hulk Hogan. Not in any sort of
direction. Not inappropriately.
But in a match with Hulk Hogan and Junkyard Dog against Andre the Giant and some wrestling guy. Some like.
One would hope.
Yeah. Some like ex-Olympic wrestler. I forget who his name was. And Hulk Hogan fell in front of me.
And you saw, I'm more impressed with you were at a match that Andre the Giant was at.
He was unbelievably enormous.
Yeah.
Yes. I some of the stories I've read about him are just amazing. Like the number of beers that he could apparently. And then he would basically collapse, and then nobody could lift him, so they would basically just leave him where he lay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did not move fast, but when he moved, I mean, it was just...
Fastly, that's good lawyer talk speak, yeah.
I'm a lawyer, I can make up words.
Well, it's a good thing for Wesley, he doesn't. Yeah. Also, because he's been specializing in groups.
Excellent. All right, guys. I think we've done a good job this first podcast back. So, is there anything anybody wants to plug or mention before we wrap this one up? Douglas, you working on what an ugly cap. I mean, it's so sad that a team that even if they get to the Super Bowl will lose to the 49ers.
We'll see New Orleans again. See you in New Orleans.
Have you seen that guy Kaepernick? It's amazing that a running back can throw so well.
He did a terrific job. He really did.
I was actually at the San Francisco New England game, and he was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the performance he put on Saturday was really really amazing. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'll be happy as long as the Patriots beat the Ravens, honestly, because all I really want is for the Ravens to lose. Well, because Ray Lewis, I'm sorry, he's a murderer. I don't care what else, you know, people give him a pass on it, but he killed somebody.
No. He did not kill somebody. His friends killed somebody, and he helped them cover it up.
I'm not so sure that's actually true, but
no, I think it's very clear that that's what happened.
No, still he was.
And that's why he's not in jail.
He was still heavily involved, and he does not deserve to get the pass that he gets.
Yeah. Yep. So. But money, fame.
Yeah.
So. On the other hand, we have, in case folks didn't notice it today, there is one other fantastic reason to watch for all geeks to watch the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, yeah. Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton's got an ad in the Super Bowl. He wrote a great post today about he got given an ad. It's for Lincoln Mercury, I guess. So watch for the Lincoln Mercury ad during the Super Bowl, and you will see Will Wheaton.
Yeah, apparently they've been doing this thing on Twitter called "Steer the Script," I think it's called.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Who are they doing it with? Jimmy Fallon. Fallon's been doing it. And they're shooting it. Apparently, he shot a scene at Vasquez Rocks.
I know. I love that. He showed a really perfect picture of that,
which is so cool because that's like in every sci-fi TV series from the '60s.
He said as he started driving up, he just the music started playing through his head, and he just couldn't help it.
He stopped, had to stop himself from asking if they'd seen the Gorn around too.
Right. So that's we'll be watching. If the Niners don't make it, we'll be watching just for that. If the Niners do make it to the Super Bowl, we'll be watching everything that goes on.
Yeah, I think it's cool that he got an ad, obviously, to begin with, but to get an ad, to go from, not getting any commercials, ever, to, since he was a kid, pretty much, to getting one during the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, that's it. If you go read the post that he wrote about today, it's really cool, especially, talking about how he was talking with his agent, who's, been a friend of his for a decade or more, and just saying how his agent's, but you realize, of course, that this is a really good thing for future jobs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. You get a national ad like that, it's a pretty big thing on your resume.
So, unless the ad stinks.
You get an ad during the most expensive ad buying TV period in the entire year.
I mean, look at what it did for Pets.com.
It did drive more people to their website. Unfortunately, their business model sucked, so it didn't help them that.
Well, their business model was better than furniture.com, who decided, free shipping on furniture will be a good idea.
Oh, I know. I actually interviewed at furniture.com. And I said, this is your business model? Really?
Free shipping. Do you know how much it costs to move a couch?
And, I think it was computers.com, where they got tons of venture, and they spent about half of the venture capital on getting the URL, getting the domain name computers.com, and almost about 90% of the rest of it on buying one commercial slot during the Super Bowl.
Oh, boy.
And strangely, that didn't help them that much.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but has there ever been a business with a generic noun .com address that is the name of the company that's done successfully, that's done really well? Furniture.com, pets.com. There's no computers.com, lightbulbs.com. Is there any single noun commodity.com company that's ever done well?
I assume you're excluding Amazon because you can't actually buy Amazons on Amazon.
Oh, no. I would. Yeah, exactly. That would be books.com.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't think so.
Trisha mentions cars.com.
That's true. Cars.com has been fairly successful.
They're not a direct reseller. They're information and connecting you with people, right?
That's true.
But yeah, I won't necessarily disqualify that. But yeah, that's a good one. Anyway, food for thought for next time.
Well, ask
Yeah, I mean, in wired.com, you can't actually buy wires.
True, right, see? All right, guys. Let's call this a good one. I want to thank everybody who hung out in the chat room tonight, especially Geek Mom Patricia and Faker Mage Glenn. And otherwise, this has been the Geek Dads episode number 127. I'm Ken Danmead, editor and publisher of Geek Dad. Thank you very much, Doug. It was great to see you. You are, of course, welcome back anytime.
Great to see you. Matt, are you coming up for PAX East?
Sure am. We're going to have a panel, so yeah.
Phenomenal. That is coming up. Anybody who listens to us, I will be at the Dad 2.0 conference at the end of this month down in Houston. So folks are welcome if anyone who listens is going to that conference, please find me and say hello. I will also point out that at this point, Hip Tracks, our other podcast, is on hiatus. Z is dealing with some family stuff that's going on, so he needs to take some time out. And we will we'll get back to it as soon as we can. But for right now, no Hip Tracks, sadly. But besides that, everyone, thanks so much for listening. Matt, thank you, sir, as always.
You're welcome, as always, and thank you for hosting.
You got it. And we will see you back in 2 weeks with another Geek Dad Hip Tracks. Until then, folks, so long.
Hey, guys.
Good night.
Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad.